our time period is so blessed. We have so many more conferences, much better music. When I became a believer, I went to a Christian bookstore near Halpine in Rockville, and the closest thing I could get is Jimmy Swagger cassette, Robbie Heiner's cassette, who sang with Jimmy Swagger, and a new group called Maranatha. These light blue things. And I was so hungry for worship, I even got a cassette of Mahalia Jackson. So I had a set of cassettes, and I would play it in my little boombox in my basement. And I would instinctively raise my hand, jump. I mean, I didn't go to a charismatic church, but instinctively I would do these things. And then instinctively I would just drive, in combination with playing hooky and kicky, I would drive to Carter Rock or the airport, and even when I was suffering, I would just spend time praying, just being in my father's LTD station wagon, this big boat of a car, playing the music, just reading the Bible. There was such a sweetness to me, such a sincere, sweet hunger. That's not the season. For many of the young people, you haven't had that. And so back in the 80s, when there was not much music, we didn't even have good teaching on any of, like, healing or the prophecy of whatever. I remember in college, we never used the word prophetic, although many of the folks, young people, were. We just used the word discernment, kind of as a catch-all phrase. And even the Friday night prayer that turned into an all-night prayer with Shin leading, it was just him and changed? Why is it that some people change radically even within a short period of time? It's a huge mystery. One of the things I'm learning is it is really not that mysterious. It really isn't. It's not hidden from us, from God. Nor is it the kind of mystery of physics. It's partly a mystery because we don't take the time to scrutinize, to interrogate what's really going on in our lives. Now, I've been working on this question for a while, and I've settled on 6 different ways that God changes us. Okay, this isn't the only 6 ways, but it is a good start. I share this during church picnic. And the acronym is SAP, S-A-P. Think of it as a sap of a tree. The nutrients of a tree run through its sap. It's in the sap. 2 S's, 2 A's, 2 P's. How do people change? Thankfully, there's some good work by psychologists, neuroscientists, theologians. People are writing various books. One great book is called Relational Spirituality by Todd Paul, his wife, our professors at Iowa. So some of the stuff is from them. Some of the other stuff is from us. Yes, let's start with this. Not only so, but we glory in our sufferings, and suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, character, hope, and hope does not disappoint us, does not put us to shame, because God has poured out His love into our hearts and the Holy Spirit. That's Romans 5:3-5. Paul had an insight. But we also glory in what? Our suffering. Suffering produces, if it's done right, perseverance. Perseverance develops what? Moral character. And character produces what? Hope. And hope doesn't put us to shame because love. Paul, how does love and hope get connected? Well, if you stay in hope, you are staying in love. Love is the source of all strength, all virtues in the Christian life. So hope allows you to worship God in the midst of your suffering. Hope allows you to stay faithful to God in the midst of difficulty. And if you stay faithful and steady in God, you will encounter the love of God. So one S is suffering. Now, suffering is not something we self-engineer. It happens to us. But suffering is double-edged. For many, suffering destroys their weak faith. And some suffering, I would actually call affliction. Some suffering is so intense that you lose your mind. I remember speaking with Andrew numerous times that there are actual cases of people who are persecuted severely. Missionary pastor and under persecution, they actually go insane. Not they're choosing to go insane, but they lose their mind. They lose their sanity. One of these sufferers was asked, what about these people who went insane? And his answer, one brand answer is, yes. Your mind because you are a follower of Jesus, that is a kind of sacrificial offering. But most of us will never inhabit or experience affliction of that kind. But suffering will occur. I just named some generic sufferings in life. Loss of a loved one, sickness. Loss of that's the left side of the brain being activated, very kind of sequential, logical. But then in your storytelling, you'll say something like, and I learned about God. I learned about myself. Then I saw all my friends. Then I saw that was the Holy Spirit. The right side of the brain brings all these details together in a perspective. And storytelling is important because when you tell your story, you set yourself up for greater experiences. That's why debriefing on a short mission trip is important. That's why something powerful that happens, good or ill, debriefing is important. Part of a grieving process, if you go to the level of this, understanding what's going on, debriefing, talking about it. So talking about it, sharing your feelings, you actually put things into a space and a place that's no longer chaotic and overwhelming. Storytelling. There are two A's. Attention and attachment. Attention is ways of attending. There is a short book by Ian Gilchrist called Ways of Attending. And basically, think of the Mary and Martha story. I went back to the story. I thought, why was Jesus present with Martha? It says in the text, she was distracted by many things. Jesus is here. Oh my goodness, the food's not ready. The floor's dirty. Well, dirt floor. Okay, we'll get about that. So she's busy with sequencing. And Mary saw Jesus. She wanted to just hear him. She probably sensed his days on earth was better. Jesus gently corrects her. Martha, you've been distracted by many things, but one thing is so when we attend, athlete in the world says, I don't, ouch. You're not going to get elite athletes at all. Like Michael Jordan, after each game, he would soak his feet, his legs, and a tub of ice. There is actual pain and difficulty in the Tour de France. But over a series of time and regimen, you will actually transform your body. Not only your body, but these practices actually transform your neural networks. One of the areas of study, this guy that I listened to at Harvard, he was talking about neuroplasticity. That typically we think of neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to change and form when people are young. Naturally, when they're very young, brains develop all the time. But he says actual study shows that your brain continues to be plastic, not fixed, but open to change. And the key is habits, practices, ways of thinking. Over a period of time, you will lay down new neural networks, and you will actually feel different, think different. And so this is the basis of rehabilitation of stroke patients. Someone has stroke, they lose their ability to speak or walk, but then through therapy, speech is regained, ability to walk. Same with piano. Okay. Most of you are right-handed, but if you are a decent pianist, you can play with your left. You can play different rhythms. That's still a mystery to me. I can't. When my right goes like this, my left has to follow. I can't do something except. Again, how did that evolve? Through practice. If you're a right-handed person and you lose your ability to throw a ball with your right, keep on practicing with your left, and you'll get proficient enough. What's happening? What in the brain is laying down neural networks for the ability to throw with your left hand? And spiritual practices over a period of time transform your heart. Spiritual practices. So on Friday, I said, thank God people were here, more people. And for many of us, just showing up is more than half the battle. If you don't like to pray, don't like to worship, but if you know how to drive a car and get your body here, half the battle's won. You just need to show up and just kind of go through the motions, and pretty soon you'll be caught up in actual prayer and worship, and over a period of time, you will be transformed. And the last letter is P. A P is people. We need one. And so of all these things, my heart keeps on going to the area of P, practice, especially prayer. And so I'm trying to think, Lord, I don't want to be reductionistic. I know all these six things are important. Suffering, storytelling, attending, attention, attachment, practices of people. But if I want to highlight something, it's a certain practice. So I have my sermon titles, You Are How You Pray and What You Love. I think if you know, if your prayer life is rich and dynamic, I almost guarantee you, 99.99%, that you will be transformed if your heart is engaged with God. How you pray will shape the kind of person you'll become. Now, how you pray will be rooted in what you love, and that is if you love God and you know different ways of praying, you will be transformed. Many people in all the religions pray. So the key thing isn't the activity itself, it's the prior relationship with God. Jesus said, my worshipers will be worshiping in spirit and in truth. So once you're saved and you pray, you will be transformed. How you pray. And so, remaining time. how to pray. In both Matthew 4 and Luke 4, we read that he was sent by the Holy Spirit to the desert to be tested by the devil, but that's not a full description. What was he doing 40 days without water, without food? Was he just constantly being tested by the devil? The answer is no. He is communing with God the Father. And there are just a few of these episodes of testing. Before he launches out, he is a man steeped in prayer. He has to find himself in prayer, because if he doesn't, he, Jesus, will lose his way, because life before him is so difficult. And then we read about Jesus, Garden of Gethsemane, praying intensely, like he's sweating blood, and then scientists, biologists, doctors, sometimes they had intensity. Your blood vessels may pop with that kind of level of stress. So we read about, but Jesus is thoroughly a man of prayer. And for him, prayer is tied in with who he is and what he's called to be. He's not adding prayer to his righteousness. Basically, his calling rises from prayer, because his obedience, his hearing, his communion with God the Father, everything comes from prayer. He doesn't make a big show of it, but obviously the disciples were watching him, and they're understanding the key to this man must be prayer. Teach us to pray. So there's this beautiful, powerful passage in Hebrews 5. This is the passage for today. I'm just going to highlight a verse here. And basically what I'm saying is Jesus prayed in a certain kind of way. Doesn't that imply that the followers of Jesus same way Christ did not take on himself the glory of becoming a high priest of God, such, you are my son, today I have become your father. And he says in another place, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cry and tears to one who had saved him. And he was heard because of his memory. Son though he was, he learned obedience to what he suffered once made. Son though he was, he learned obedience to what he suffered, and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who made. He was designated by God to be high priest. I pray. I mean, we could have guessed this, but it says it explicitly. He offered up, during the days of Jesus' life, he offered up prayers and petitions. Prayer cries and tears. Why tears? Why cries? But to assume the opposite would mean that he's not fully human. He's not fully engaged. Jesus, the man who's fully alive to pleasures and pain and joys, recognized wide-eyed open what he was called to do, and the disciples he had, the challenges he had, and the weight of what he had to do. How in the world are you going to accomplish without prayer? Not my cup, not my will, but your will be done. So it's in this place of deep prayer. Jesus himself rises up to saved without being a man or woman of prayer? It's God's grace. It's like asking, is it legally possible to be married if I don't get divorced? But yeah, of course. Once you sign the papers, did the wedding, you could live in separate states and separate countries. You could still be legally married, but I wouldn't call that much of a marriage. By trusting Jesus, I'm saved. Do I need to pray? But you're asking the wrong question with the wrong attitude. You're not being saved. It's like, what is God? Who is God? It's that place. It's the how of prayer. And maybe I'll talk about this more in another Sunday. A good place to start. A good place to start are the Psalms. That's Israel's prayer book. It's worship book. There's more to it. Modern scholars were putting different categories, 7 categories, 5 categories. Much of it is more from scholarly point of view. In a form of criticism. Looking at the sort of content of the prayer and understanding of how they took place. Some are laments. Some are individual laments. This is prayers when things are not going well. Laments are great because it speaks to us when we're having a hard time. When there's tragedy. Laments, both individual and communal. There are prayers of thanksgiving. Individual and communal. There are royal psalms. A king's being enthroned. There are wisdom psalms. There are Torah psalms. flowers. Like, it's the most